Okay, good morning, ladies. Let's start. Parshas Vayetze. We're going to begin with a different type of text that I usually show you, but it's a very inspiring one. So I thought I'd take the opportunity to go beyond my comfort zone of sorts. So the Torah in last week's Parsha tells us that Rivka gets wind of Esav's desire to kill Yaakov, and she quickly sends Yaakov away, right? It's something we're familiar with in source number one. This is from the end of last week's Parsha. But you got Rivka as divrei Esav ben ha-gidol. It's told to Rivka what Esav intended to do to really take out Yaakov. Vatishlach vatikral Yaakov ben ha-katan. She sends to Yaakov her smaller child. Vatomrei love, hinei Esav achicha misnachim lecha lehargecha. Right? Esav wants to kill you. V'ata v'ni shema b'koli, my son, listen to me, right? The mother waves her finger and she says, Yaakov, listen to me. V'kum b'rach l'cha el Lavan achi charana. Go run away to Lavan, my brother, in Charan, and we'll discuss how what Yaakov does when he gets to Charan in a couple of minutes. But clearly, Rivka has a tone of her voice where she's telling Yaakov, run. Your life is endangered. Run away. Get out of here so quickly. Good. What does the Torah tell us that Yaakov does? If you look in the first pasuk in this week's Parsha, in source number 2, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava, Yaakov leaves from Be'er Shava, Vayelech Charana, perfect timing, and Yaakov walks to Charan. So the Sfas Emes, one of the great Hasidic masters, notices that there's a bit of an inconsistency over here. Yaakov's mother, Rivka, tells Yaakov, run! Get out of here!
He walks.
And what does Yaakov do? Vayelech Haran. He walks. So what is he? Is he doing just to spite his mother? Make his mother upset? She should worry a little bit more. I'm not running. I'm going to walk nice and slow.
But how far is it?
Oh, it was a journey.
So he was pacing himself.
It could be.
These children, they
run,
they walk,
they
say,
why do they? So it could be, but obviously I think there's a deeper message over here. I'm not just bringing you the Sfas Emes to show you that Yaakov was a rebellious child. Yeah, sure.
I tell you why. Because it says here, Bnah HaKatan.
Right.
The little baby. So the baby.
No, but that's not. That's No. That's not the case.
It makes us all feel better. A couple of weeks ago, I had an article. So he wrote this article. It was in the article. But basically, what it is, don't feel bad if you think your family is dysfunctional. Just look at the Torah.
I have a bit of a more positive message to share with you this morning. But again, the issue is that Rivka tells Yaakov, run. And we see from this morning's parasha that he's walking. So says the Sfas Emes, based on a beautiful pasuk in Mishlei. A beautiful idea. The pasuk in Mishlei, this is the box that corresponds to source number 3. The pasuk in Mishlei says, Az teilech lebetach, that you have to walk with confidence, with trust in Hashem. So says the Sfas Emes, just a beautiful idea. This is in a box. Ki be'emes baruch Yaakov mipnei Esav. Really, Yaakov was running from Esav. I think there are more sheets in the middle of the page. You're coming at a perfect time to do this. It's just a beautiful Sfas Emes. We're contrasting the fact that Rivka tells Yaakov to run, and Yaakov, we learn in the beginning of this week's Parsha, walks. So why does he walk if his mother says run? He should be afraid. So again, the Sfas Emes in the box begins by telling us, based on Pasuk in Mishlei, as teilech lebetach, that a person has to walk with confidence and bitachon in Hashem. Ki be'emes baruch Yaakov mipnei Esav. Really, Yaakov was running away from Esav. Af al pi chein, though, even though Yaakov was really afraid for his wife, ksiv vayetze vayelech, lo belashon bericha. Yaakov did not run. Ki havoteach b'Hashem be'emes mevin ki me'Hashem mitzadei gaver. You see, a person who truly trusts in the Ribono Shalom knows that the Ribono Shalom is the one in charge. And there's no reason to run if you really believe that Hashem is controlling everything. V'lo yisle hadavar b'mikre. And a person doesn't say, oh, everything is just happenstance. Everything is up to chance. That wasn't what Yaakov believed. Yaakov fully believed in the Ribono Shel Olam. V'zehu bechinas Yaakov ish tam. And that's what the Torah tells us earlier, that Yaakov was an ish tam, a simple man. What does a simple man mean? Does it imply a certain degree of naivete? That Yaakov didn't get the facts on the ground? He didn't realize the reality? No. You see, the Torah tells us in Sefer Devarim, tamim tiyah im Hashem Elokecha. You have to have a certain simplicity when it comes to your belief in God. And what does Rashi tell us that really means? Kimosha kasav Rashi bepasuk tamim tiyeh, kibel hakol b'tmimus. You have to receive everything with tamimus, which again doesn't mean a simplicity, doesn't mean a naivety, it means trusting. You have to trust in Hashem, that everything that happens to you happens for a purpose, and the Ribono Shel Olam is the one in charge.
So,
okay, good. So, I have an answer for all of that. But one second. Rivka was an anxious mother. That's the bottom line. But Yaakov was an ishtam. Yaakov had a sense of emuna and bitachon. So when you believe in Hashem, you have to do your shtalbos. You have to do your shtalbos. You have to run. You can't stay where you are and say, Esav, come and get me. Hashem's going to put up a force field. Of course it don't work that way. But when you walk, what's the rhythm? Is it a bericha? Are you running away so anxious because Esav can overcome you? Or is it a rhythm of vayelach, that you're walking? Because you really believe that the Ribono Shel Olam is the one in charge, and there's no reason to run if Hashem is orchestrating all the events. And that's what the Sfas Emes tells us, that's the difference between Rivka's command, Berach Lecha, run, and Yaakov's actions. Yaakov walked, he didn't want to stay behind, but he still believed deeply in the Ribono Shel Olam, so there's no reason to run. Just to finish off, and I'm happy to take questions. The Sfas Emes says this is the last part of the underline over here. V'zeh midas hishtavus shekasav b'chovas halavavo. So what does the word hishtavus mean? What's shaveh?
Equal.
There's a certain evenness to tzaddikim. They're even keeled. They're not overly emotional. Because when you believe in the Ribono Shel Olam, so all of your actions are done b'nachat. Because Hashem's in charge. And that's the midah of hishtavos, of evenness, that you can read about in the beautiful work of the Chovas HaLevavos, Rabbi Bechai Ibn Pekuda of the 11th century. Okay, questions?
Okay, another thing is, listen to what he is leaving.
Okay.
It's the last time he's going to see his father.
Okay. He didn't know that.
What?
He didn't know that.
His father just
Rivka just says, go. No, yeah, but Rivka says, go until I call you back.
I think if his father gave him the bracha, his father's giving him his bracha,
okay,
he can't see anymore. It's hard to leave your home. You don't run away from that.
Okay. Fair point. But maybe that's why the Torah is focusing on that. I would think that your point is well taken, but is seen more clearly in the first half of the pasuk. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. That Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva. And Rashi says, why does the Torah need to tell us Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva? Obviously, if he's going to Charan, he left Be'er Sheva. So maybe the first part of the pasuk is there to reiterate how difficult it was for Yaakov to leave all his familial connections in Be'er Sheva. But the Sfas Emes is focusing Vayelech, the walk as opposed to the run. I thought that was such a beautiful idea, the contrast between Rivka's commandment and Yaakov's implementation.
I think it's a point care set
okay.
For the Yeshiva of Shem Ba'ever that
okay.
He had to stop there in order to take its time.
All fair comments, but I think the Sfas Emes still stands.
And
yes.
There is another thing I like to okay. What you said before about Eve and how it is, there is a saying,
show me. Right, exactly.
So it's right. Like the word of the sages.
Exactly. So again, just for everyone who came late, we'll just tell you outside that we noted that Rivka tells Yaakov to run away from Esav, run to Charan, and we see that Yaakov walks. So why does Yaakov walk? So the Sfas Emes so beautifully says, if you believe in Hashem, there's no reason to run. Hashem is in charge. So you gotta do your part. So you gotta walk. You can't stay where you are. But ultimately, there's no reason to run if you really believe that Hashem is orchestrating all the events. And Yaakov believed that Hashem was protecting him. I'll show you that the Rishonim don't all agree to this, so we'll get there in a little bit. But this is certainly a beautiful insight of the Sfas Emes.
I found 2 points of language.
Yes.
Tam is not only simple. It's finished. It's whole.
Right.
Tam v'nishma.
Right.
I read the Hebrew. He went out of Be'er Sheva.
Okay.
He went probably very quickly out. And then when he was a little bit distance away, he started walking.
Okay, so that's like we were saying before. Vayetze means that he quickly left.
You have to be.
Yes. There are Shivim Panim Matara. Good. Okay, so now let's move on to actually the next perek in Parshas Vayetze. The perek Chav Ches, which is the first perek of Parshas Vayetze, is actually split in half. The first half is part of Parshas Toldos, And the second half is the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, and that's where we learn that Yaakov lies down and has a dream with the angels going up and going down. And Hashem tells Yaakov, reiterates, Yaakov, I've got your back, I'm going to protect you, and you don't need to worry. And Parshas on Perechav Tes now begins with Yaakov walking towards Charan. So in source number 4, the Torah tells us, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, that Yaakov picks up his legs, Vayelech Artsa V'Nekedem, and he goes towards the land in the east. So the Rishonim want to understand, what does it mean that Yaakov picked up his legs? I mean, don't we all pick up our legs when we walk? Why does the Torah need to tell us that Yaakov picked up his legs? So I wanted to show this to you, although it's a somewhat of a technical point, just to show you it doesn't really go perfectly with the Radak, but let me with the Svas MS, but let me show you inside source number 5.
When he needs to, he can
hurry. Something along those lines. So says the Radak in source number 5, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, Kevan Sheheftichu Hakel, Veher'o Hamare Hagadol Hazeh. Once Yaakov was promised by Hashem that Hashem is going to take care of him. And that interaction happened in the last part of the previous parak, in parak Chaf Ches, right? Again, as I mentioned, that's the opening parak of Parshas Vayitze. After Hashem promises Yaakov that he's going to take care of him, Samach v'nasa ragla v'kalos. Then his feet are light. He's able to go quickly. V'halach sameach v'tov lev. And then he goes gladly. So it is a little bit different than the Radak, right? But I apologize. And a little bit different than the Svas Emes. Because the Svas Emes says that the original phrase, Vayelech Harana, implied a confidence and a happiness in Hashem. And the Radak is telling us, no, it's only after he has the interaction with Hashem and he's promised that he's going to be taken care of, then he walks with a certain, what do they say? You walk with a little bounce in your step. A little bounce in your step. Exactly. So, says the Radak further on, this is the second set of bolder words in Source 5, Ki mitchila hayaholich berifyon ragalayim. Initially, when Yaakov was running away, he was running away berifyon ragalayim. What's a rifayon? A weakness. There was a certain weakness in his step. Ke'adam haboreach mi beis aviv atzav. Like a person who runs away sad from his father's home. He was sad to leave. Ve'lo haya boreach b'chipazon. Nonetheless, Yaakov wasn't running away very fast. Ke'boreach mi'cherev. Like a person who runs away from a sword. Ke'lo haya mepachi mi'cherev achiv kozman shaya aviv chai. As long as Yitzchak was alive, Yaakov trusted that Esav wouldn't kill him. So the Radak is a little bit of a hybrid. On the one hand, the Radak is telling us that only after Yaakov gets the Haftacha from Hashem, does Yaakov now walk with a little bit of a bounce in his step and more confident that he's going to be okay. So from that perspective, it's different from the Svas Emes. On the other hand, he points out that Yaakov never really runs, because Yaakov wasn't truly afraid, because as long as Yitzchak was alive, so he knew that Esav wouldn't kill him. Okay, so that's the Radak. Just to show you two other ways that the Mefarshim translate this interesting phrase, that Yaakov lifted his legs. Again, what's the point of the Torah sharing that with us? It's abundantly clear. We walk by lifting our legs. So says the Aruch Chaim, a beautiful pshat, we know that when Yaakov is running away, who came to kill him or rob him? That what Medrash tells us that Eliphaz, right? Esav's son came, and Eliphaz said, my dad said I should kill you, but I don't want to kill you. So Yaakov says, why don't you take all of my money, all of my possessions? And a poor man is like a dead man on some level. So the Aruch Chaim says, once that happened, Yaakov had nothing left to carry but his legs. He was poor. He had nothing to carry but his legs, says the Aruch Chaim in source number 6. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav Niskavin Bazeh. What's the Torah's intention that it shared this information with us? Ki ani haya, he was poor. Velohaya lo lisa rak raglav. The only thing he could carry was his legs. Vasher lazeh kol. That's all he had. That's all he had. Interesting, right? Fair point. You'd have to see what pasuk the medrash is going on. I don't know offhand. But it's a very interesting interpretation. And just to share with you one other interpretation, and I get a little giddy when I see the different Mefarshim taking the same words and translating it so differently. And so the Kli Yakar also has a different shot. Because we know at the end of the last parak, so we learned that Yaakov goes to, well, he really passes by Har HaMoria, right? And the Torah says that there was Kfitas HaDerech, that the land sort of folded up, and it made Yaakov's trip very short. So says the Kli Yakar, the Torah needs to tell us over here that here there was no Kfitas HaDerech. He had to walk like everybody else. Vayisa Yaakov Rago. He had to walk. There was no miraculous event that made the land fold up. So says the Kli Yakar in source number 7. Lefi shebehalicha rishona, meaning in the last perek, the Torah tells us, and it's really elucidated by the rabbis, shekafsa lo ha'aretz, that there was kfitzas haderech. Again, that means the land folded up and it was a shorter distance to walk. Lefi zeh lo haisa halicha tuluya beziruz raglav ki'im benes. Over there, in the last parak, the fact that Yaakov got to his destination was not a function of his legs walking, it was a function of the miracle. Therefore, in our parak, hutzrach lomar, shemikan v'hala lo halach ayedei kfitza sa'eretz, ki im biraglav kishar adam. Here, he had to walk normally. So that's why the Torah has to go out of its way to tell us Yaakov lifted up his feet, even though that's clear, because the Torah is contrasting. How Yaakov got to Har HaMoriah was miraculous. He didn't really need to walk. How Yaakov got from Har HaMoriah to Haran, that was normal. He had to walk like everybody else. So again, I find it very exciting to see three different approaches in the Mefarshim that explain this extraneous phrase that Yaakov lifted up his feet. Either like the Radak, that there was a little bit of a bounce in Yaakov's walk now, because he really trusted that Hashem was going to take care of him after he got that promise in the vision at the end of the last parak. Or like the Orach Chaim tells us that he was poor, he had nothing else to raise up but his feet. Or like the Kli Yakar, the Torah is reiterating the naturalness, the normalcy of Yaakov's travels now, in contrast to the miraculous nature that met him in the end of the last week's parsha. In the last parak. Any questions so far? Yes.
I just want to say that it's almost like what happened to Elazar.
Right.
Because also Elazar, when he went to find a wife for Yitzchak, he also had some pizza there because the proof was...
Right, no, he did. No, 100% Eliezer had pizza. Yeah, 100%. Good. Okay. Okay, so let us look at Rabbeinu Bachaya in source number 8. But before we do that, let's just get a bit more context what's going on. So again, Yaakov lifts up his feet and he gets to the land in the east, which is a reference to the land of the land of Haran. So the Torah tells us in source number 4, Pasuk Beis, Vayar, Vihine Be'er Basada. There's a well in the field. Vihine Sham Shlosha Adreitzon, Rotzim Alea. There are three flocks of sheep that are waiting by this well, kimin habeer hahi yashku hadarim, because the flocks generally get water from this well. Va'eben hagedol, va'eben gedol al pi habeer. And there was a large rock on top of the well, and it was so large that the shepherds could not remove it to give their flock what to drink. V'nasu shama kol hadarim. And when all the shepherds and all the flocks came together, v'galalu es ha'evem mi'api ha'be'er, and they were able to remove the stone from the well, v'yishku et ha'tzon, they would feed their sheep, v'yishivu et ha'evem al pi ha'be'er limkoma, and then they would put the stone back on. So you might be asking, why did the Torah share this information with us? It's really inconsequential. I guess the Torah is telling us how strong Yaakov was, that Yaakov was able to remove the stone by himself, but it seems like a lot of information. You want to wonder, why is the Torah sharing this information with us? So the beauty of Sefer Bereishis specifically is that lots of the details that we think are extraneous are actually visions of the future. Right? The Ramban tells us that Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim, that whatever our patriarchs did set the genetic code for the future. For example, in last week's parsha, so we learned that Yitzchak digs three wells, two of which are not successful. The Plishtim end up arguing with Yitzchak, and he has to put the dirt back on it and close them. And the third, Rechovot, is successful, and he's able to get water, and he becomes quite wealthy with that well. So the Ramban writes, what does the Torah share that information with us? What difference does it make that Yaakov digs wells? And the Ramban writes that these three wells are an allusion to the three Beis HaMikdashes. Beis HaMikdashes. That are going to be built in the future. And the first Beis HaMikdash, the first well is called Asek. Asek means contention, fighting. And Ramban said that alludes to the first Beis HaMikdash, which will be filled with fighting and quarreling both internally and externally. The second well that Yitzchak digs is called Sitna. What's Sitna? Hatred. Why is the second well called hatred? Because the second well is a symbol of the second Beis Hamikdash, which will be destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. And the last well is called Rechovot. Rechovot means space or expanse. Because the third well is symbolic of the third Beis Hamikdash that ultimately will bring us space and expanse and security amongst the nations. So what we see as being very technical details are actually really very exciting glimpses into the future of our nation. So the Rishonim over here as well see allusions, deep allusions into these details that foretell a time long into the future. So look with me in Rabbeinu Bachai in source number 8.
So wait, so the
yes.
Wall.
Yeah. So you'll see. Okay. So look at the Rabbeinu Bachai in source number 8. Vayar v'hinei ba'er basadeh. So Rabbeinu Bachai notes that there seems to be this common theme of wells, and we've spoken about this, Dr. Spear, why the wells and why the avos are waiting by the wells. And so look at what the Rabbeinu Bachai writes. Bechol echad min ha'avos matzinu be'eros. When it comes to every single one of our patriarchs, we always see some sort of well. Uvechol echad mehem nirmaz ha'atid. And in every instance where we see a well, it's a future glimpse. We are able to see into the future. Uve'inyan Yitzchak karua kasav be'er mayim chayim. Specifically with Yitzchak, the Torah calls it Be'er Mayim Chaim, the water of life. What does that mean? So says Rabbeinu Bachaya, V'inyan Bekula, the idea regarding all of the wells, Ki ha-Be'er Remez LeBeis HaMikdash, because a well is a reference, is a hint to the Beis HaMikdash, Shehu Asi La'asos Bizaram, that will be made by the patriarch's children. And the reason the Beis HaMikdash is compared to a well, who can tell me without reading on? What do we compare Torah to? We compare Torah to water. Water is the source of our physical life, and Torah is the source of our spiritual life. So there's no more appropriate connection and symbol of a Beis HaMikdash than a well that draws physical life, that supports physical life. V'him shel Beis HaMikdash lebe'er lefi shemisham teitze Torah shenimshal alamayim. Because from the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll see this later on, ki mitzion teitze Torah, right? The Beis HaMikdash is the place from which all of Torah is supposed to spring forth for Am Yisrael. So the patriarchs are constantly interacting with wells, and that's an allusion to the future time when the Jewish people will be building the various temples and we'll be spreading Torah from that source.
I have a question. Maybe I missed it because I wasn't here.
Yeah.
Abraham had a few wells. What is that? Does Midrash say about that?
So I'm not sure, but Rabbeinu Bachai is specific in his language. He says, Bekula, Ba'inyam Bekulan. Every single time you see a well, it's always an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash. What was interesting to me is that the Malbim doesn't necessarily see an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash, but sees an allusion rather to the exiles. So in source number 9, if you turn the page, says the Malbim, V'zeh shera'a Yaakov, sh'abe'er hazeh hu basadeh. The reason that the well is in the field, meaning it's exiled, it's not in the city itself, but it's outside of the city. It represents exile. Shezeh be'ez ha'golos, because this represents the time of our exile. V'zeh haya shlosha pa'amin be'golos Mitzrayim u'be'bavel u'be'edam. There are three flocks waiting by the well, because these three flocks represent the three times that we are exiled. The exile of Mitzrayim, the exile of Edom, and the exile of Babel. Sorry, one out of order. Mitzrayim, that was our first exile. Babel, right? We know that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by the Babylonians. And the Romans are traditionally considered to be the progeny of Edom, of Esav. Shagalu me'eretz Yisrael. V'zesh ha'kasav, and that's why the Torah tells us over here, V'hinei shlosha adrei tzon rotzim aleha. That's why the Torah tells us that there were three flocks of sheep waiting by the well. Ki gam begalusam rak min ha-be'er ha-hu yishku ha-adarim. Because even in our exile, we will need to be sustained by the well. Shekol kiumam hu ayidei hashkachas Hashem v'shefa'o. Because our sustenance, even in the exile, will be drawn from Hashem. So just like the flocks, which represent our exiles, we're waiting to draw from the water, when Am Yisrael will be in exile, and of course we know too well what that means, we will also draw sustenance from the well, from Hashem. From the Torah, from Hashem, exactly. The Malbim doesn't focus on the Torah, more on Hashkachas Hashem. We also will need to be connected to Hashem via the Torah, via tefillah, all sorts of ways, but we will need to be sustained from God. What's the problem? So let's continue on with this imagery, this beautiful imagery of the Malbim, right? You have the well, which is outside of the field, representing exile. You have three flocks, representing our three different exiles, and the flocks are waiting to drink, because when we're in exile, we too need to drink from the well, which represents our connection with Hashem. So the question is now, what's the symbolism of the great rock? There's a rock on top of the well. What does that rock represent?
Us.
Our Yetzer Hara. Because it's an impediment from allowing us to drink. Says the Malbim, Raksha Eben Gedola Piha Be'er. There's a large rock on the well. Sheha Yetzer Hara Beha Vonos Hema Eben HaMechases HaBe'er Bal Yazel Min Mei HaYeshua Midal Yav. There is a great rock which represents our Yetzer Hara that stops us from drawing this water. We need to connect with Hashem in the exile, but we can't sometimes because there is a rock. There is an impediment. And what's the only way, one second, and here's the beautiful part of the Malbim. What's the only way to remove that rock? So what does the Torah tell us about the shepherds? Pasuk Gimel, look back. V'nesvu shama kol ha'adarim. And it's only when all of Am Yisrael is nesvu shama. It's only when all of Am Yisrael comes together, when you have the strength of the community, that you're able to remove that rock and really draw from Hashem. So that's what the Malbim writes in the bolder words in source number 9. Rak be'es sheet asfu shama kol ha'adarim. It's only at a time when all the flocks come together. Shekol Yisrael yis achadu v'hayu l'goy achad. When all of Am Yisrael comes together as one unified nation. V'az v'galalu asa eben. Then they will be able to remove the stone. V'yiftechu mikor ha'shefa b'chol pa'am b'galusam. And then they're able to draw from Hashem. The problem is, Rak shebechol pam chazru lechtoa. Every time they sin again, ve'ayidei kach chozer ha'evin l'mkoma. That's why the Torah tells us that the shepherds would all come together, they would remove the rock, and then put it back on. And that reflects the cycle of the Jewish people. We come together, we draw from Hashem, but we soon sin, and the rock goes back on. And they come together, they remove, and the rock goes back on. So on and so forth. There's this cycle. So the Malbim, I understand, he's combining some of the imagery. Because he starts by saying that the flocks represent the three exiles. And then he says, when the flocks come together, that's representative of Am Yisrael coming together and removing the rock, the impediments. So that's part of a midrashic, that's the midrashic license. You can see multiple images, multiple meaning from one image. But
you got
to work with me over here, Lord. I just thought it was beautiful the way the Malbim sees these glimpses into the future from these facts that are not really needed. Again, you need the facts to show you the strength of Yaakov, that he removes the rock by himself. But the deeper messages over here are about what's going to happen in the future. Yes.
Except that how do you with that thought, how do you do that? Yaakov was able to do it by himself. That doesn't fit.
So I saw that somewhere. Where did I see that? Oh, so keep on going. This is the last line in source number 9. Until Yaakov comes along, Sheb Zichuso Yibane Mikdash Hashlishi. Somehow Yaakov represents Mashiach. And it's his zechus that the Evan will be removed by himself. Something along those lines. The Malbim does address that issue. Yes, Alana.
So in the Torah, is that rock Sur or Evan?
Evan. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'd like to add something.
Please.
With the Evan or the Be'er, it's many times happens, even with Moshe.
Right.
He started and then
right.
God. So every time they have the same Evan, that is.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
Maybe the Evan is there
This is all the Midrash. We can't get too fixated on the details because it's not about the exact text. It's about the broader symbolism of the text. So I just wanted to show you that Rabbeinu Bachaya sees in the well an allusion to the Beis Hamikdash, and the Malbim sees a bit of a different allusion to the times of the exile and the strength of the Jewish people when they come together. How can they remove the rock, and so on and so forth. So let's not fixate on the details, but let's just take away the beautiful imagery and symbolism that the Mefarshim are able to see from this text.
I just want you to comment for me that Etzurah is symbolic of Hashem.
Right.
And when Yaakov lifts the rock, he's showing the people who we look to. So the rock is right. Like more
beautiful.
Symbolic of Hashem.
Right. Yeah, 100%. Just to show you the Hadar Zikanim in source number 10, also drawing from Midrashic sources, how there are just lots of different allusions here, and you see them in different ways. So just to show you in source number 10, V'nei sham shlosha adrei tzon rovtzim alehat, the Hadar Zikim says, the Torah tells us that there are three flocks waiting by the well. So be'er, zetzion, the well represents Zion, dechsiv ki mitzion teitzei Torah. Because the Torah, we learn that from Tzion, that's where the Torah will emanate. Ve'inayim ela Torah, we know that water is an allusion to Torah. Be'gimel adrei tzon, these three flocks, what do they represent according to a different medrash? Legimel regalim, the three festivals. Okay, rovatzim aleha, that they're sitting down. Remez legimel golios mitzrayim bavel edom. Okay, and v'ne'asvu shama, and when all the shepherds come together, zekibutz golios v'zechush losha avos u'moshe v'aron u'miriam. Okay, and this is the chus of all of our patriarchs and our leaders. So the rock is removed, and there's able to be kibbutz galias. Okay, I just shared that with you just to show you how the different mefarshim see different allusions, but there's certainly much deeper symbolism and imagery in this text. Good.
It's like they don't know what to do with all of this.
Correct.
Narrative.
Right. Exactly. Details that we don't necessarily need. Details they don't necessarily need, 100%. So we know...
It's there.
Correct.
And we know that it's there for a reason.
To teach us about the future, 100%.
So you need the details of Reish, you'd like to get into it, you know? And then
okay, 100%. But again, the Torah just said that there was a large rock, and that when Yaakov saw Rachel, so he removed the rock.
Yeah.
Why do we have to have this information that there were three flocks waiting there, waiting for the shepherds to come?
More detail, the more real.
Okay,
the Torah is not
more, and it's not there.
Correct. Correct. I think that's what motivates the Midrashim and the Mefarshim to bring you deeper levels to the story, because the Torah, which is always so precise with its language, to give you this overabundance of detail for what? So again, it's a glimpse into the future. So we know that Yaakov asks the shepherds, "Do you know Lavan, Rachel?" And he gets this information, and he sees that actually at that moment Rachel is coming out to water her flock. So to provide water for her flock. So the Torah tells us, this is source number 11, and you'll see there's the bolded phrase that appears again and again. So the Torah tells us, "Vayhi kasher ra'a Yaakov es Rachel bas Lavan." It was when Yaakov see Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, achi imo, the brother of his mother. V'yasol Lavan, and he sees the sheep of Lavan, achi imo, the brother of his mother. So Yaakov sees Rachel. V'yigash Yaakov, v'yagel es ha'evim me'api ha'be'er. Yaakov runs and he removes the stone by himself. V'yishak etzol Lavan, achi imo, and he provides water for the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his sister. So what phrase might trouble you over here? A careful reading of the text. Right, why do we need achi imo? Once is okay. The truth is we know who Lavan is already from earlier on in the Torah. So why do we have this phrase that appears three times? And just for the sake of completion, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayishak Yaakov leRachel, Yaakov kisses Rachel, Vayisa et kolo vayavich, and he begins to cry. The Mefarshim are split on why Yaakov is crying. Is he crying tears of joy? Or is he crying tears of sadness? And it's unclear exactly why he's crying. Vayaged Yaakov leRachel, ki achi aviyahu, Yaakov tells Rachel that he's the brother of her father. It doesn't literally mean the brother of her father, but it means the son of the brother of her father. V'chi ben Rivka, who he is the daughter, he is the son of Rivka, Vateretz Vategilavia, and of course Rachel gets very excited. She goes home to tell her father Laban. Good. So Rabbi Bechaya wants to know, what is going on here? This phrase, Achi Imo.
And then when he says it the other way.
That's true. That's another good point. And we're going to see why Yaakov says what he says to Rachel in a little bit. So Rabbi Bechaya has two beautiful observations in source 12. Vayhi kasher a Yaakov. Hiskir bekasav hazeh kama pa'amim achi imo. Pasuk Yud has this phrase achi imo, the brother of his mother, number of times. Lo'odia ki kol ma sheishtadel Yaakov bitzon lava lahashkosam, is to teach us that all of the efforts that Yaakov does to help the flock of Lavan drink, Umashahaya Chomel al Rachel Bas Lavan, and the reason Yaakov had mercy on Rachel, Lo Asa Lichvod Lavan, it wasn't done for the honor of Lavan, Rak Lichvod Imo, it was done for the sake of Yaakov's mother. Yaakov's mother, this is Yaakov's mother's brother, then I'm going to involve myself in helping them. But from the perspective of Lavan, that wasn't enough for Yaakov to do these heroic actions. Bishvil shaya achi imo umipnezeh, and that's why bechopam sheyaskir hakasav shemosha Lavan harasha, and that's why every time the Torah tells us, at least in Pasuk Yud, the name Lavan, who was an evil person, every time we see the name of Lavan, yaskir bechopam achi imo, the Torah kind of loops back and says Lavan, who is the brother of his sister, of his mother rather, levayer ki lo haya mashket sono shel Lavan ki im bishvil shehaya achi imo. The only reason Yaakov does what he does is because of Lavan's relationship with his mother, with Yaakov's mother, not because of Lavan himself. The yaskir belibo es imo asher ahavto shenas nalo ha'itza azos lavo ilav. And Torah is giving us an insight into what was going on in Yaakov's heart. That Yaakov went to the great trouble because of his mother. So that's one reason. It makes sense. Good. The next reason, the next paragraph. Ve'od yesh bazeh tam acher. There's another deeper reason as well. Sheharei kisheyira'e adam o yishma ma shehu chafetz. You see, when a person hears about something that they desire, that they like, a person is able to add strength and vigor, right? When you're doing something that you like to do, you do it with more of an oomph than when you're doing something that you don't like to be doing, that you're being forced into doing. Shehaya adam choshev ki tav o shel Yaakov beroso es Rachel nimshach achar ta'ava gufanis. You see, Rachel was a pretty lady, and when Yaakov sees Rachel, one might have thought that what was motivating Yaakov's actions, it was his testosterone, right? He was very excited to show off to Rachel, and that's why he heroically removes the stone by himself and Rachel, see, right? So that's not what's going on. It would be compelling to think that that's what's taking place. But the Torah is telling us everything Yaakov did was not Yaakov showing off to Rachel, but Yaakov was doing really because of his connection, Yaakov's connection with his mother. Okay, so Yaakov loves his mother. So a derivative of that is that he will go out of his way to take care of his uncle's flock. And that's why the Torah is sharing this information with us right now. Keep it up, right? Exactly. It's all l'shem shamayim. Just to keep on going in the text of Rabbeinu Bechaya, because it's so beautiful. Lakach, the third line in the second paragraph. Lakach chutzrach lomar kama pamim achei imo. That's the Torah reiterates itself again and again. The brother of his mother. Lohoros ki lo nitosef koach b'tivo l'habas Rachel. Yaakov doesn't do what he does because of his love of Rachel. V'lo hayalo b'riyasa shum his oris kitiva'ei shar b'nei Adam. He wasn't excited when he saw the beauty of Rachel. Aval hakol l'habas imo. It was all done for the love of his mother. Umipnei zeh. And here comes Rabbeinu Bechaya plugging it into the pasuk. Hiskir hakasov es Rachel es hatson, kodem sheyaskir vayagel es ha'even. You see, the Torah first tells us that Yaakov sees Rachel, who is the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother, and he sees the sheep of Lavan, who is the brother of his mother, and then he goes to show off. Right? Because if Yaakov is really interested in showing off, what should the Torah tell us? And when Yaakov sees Rachel, he goes and he removes the rock, showing off. The Torah says, no, no. First Yaakov sees Rachel, and he sees the sheep, and he connects it to his mother. Okay, once he has that connection to his mother, then he goes ahead and removes the stone. And that's the deal of Rabbi Bachaya. And as to why the Pasuk is staged the way it is, and again, why this phrase comes up so many times.
And why he tells her differently when he talks.
Exactly. Just so one other piece, and well, this will conclude. The Or HaChaim is a bit of a different spin. In source number 13, Or HaChaim first says, like Rabbi Bachaya, it's to show us how much Yaakov loved his mother. And so that's a nice way to finish this year, right? Because we started by saying that maybe Yaakov walked when his mother said to run to spite his mother, but we didn't think that that was accurate. But now we're hearing how much Yaakov really loved his mother. So Or HaChaim in the first part, again, suggests that that the Torah reiterates that Yaakov is doing what he's doing for his mother's brother. But then the Or HaChaim says something very practical. You see, if Yaakov did all this and didn't share with anybody why he was removing the stone and giving the flock to drink, people would have thought he's a meshuggah. Right? We're always a little cautious when a stranger begins to do like nice things for us. Like, what are you doing exactly? Do I know you, sir? Correct? I mean, we're always a little cautious, a little hesitant when we see that. So the Or HaChaim suggests, I'll read it inside in a minute, that every time the Torah tells us, Achei Imo, the brother of his mother, Yaakov was actually articulating this to the people surrounding him. And even to Rachel. That nobody should think that Yaakov was some Meshuggah trying to pick up a lady. He wanted to give context to his actions. So says the Or HaChaim in source number 13, this is the bolded part, what's the reason the Torah emphasizes Achi Imo? Ol Itzad HaChoshed, from the perspective of suspect. Sheyiru Ose Chesed Im Rachel. People are going to see Yaakov doing this kindness with Rachel. V'hu Ishnachri Lazat. V'hu Ishnachri. He's a farmer. What's this man doing all these kind acts for this random lady? Lazeh Hayamotzi Mipiv Tam Hadavar. Now the Or HaChaim is doing something a little sly over here. Because nowhere in the Torah does the Torah say that Yaakov actually articulated Achei Imo. But Or HaChaim is saying, no. Yaakov actually said this. That's Rachel, that she is my first cousin, because Laban is my mother's brother. And those sheep are the sheep of my first cousin's dad, and so on and so forth. He was always articulating what he was doing, so people should understand. He's not some Meshuggah, but he actually has a familial connection.
I think they shouldn't bully him because they're not doing it and he is.
Right.
Who do you think you are? You know, you
make right.
us look bad.
Right. So. Right. And the Or HaChaim goes on to say, and we'll finish with this, that Yaakov, and we can read this inside, that Yaakov immediately kisses Rachel, right? In Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel vayisa kolo vayavich. That Yaakov raises his voice, I'm sorry, Yaakov kisses Rachel and he cries. And then in Pasuk Yud Beis, he tells her who he is. So that's a little strange, right? So says the Or HaChaim, it wasn't so strange because Yaakov had been telling everybody how he's connected to Rachel. So your next question is going to be, if Yaakov already told everybody, so why does Yaakov need to reinforce that in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Yud Bet rather, Vayage Yaakov to Rachel? Why does the Torah need to tell us that? Okay, so one could say that it was a more complex conversation. It wasn't simply, hi, I'm Yaakov, my mother is Rivka, your dad is Lavan, their brother and sister. It was maybe more of a deeper conversation, more of a family history that they were going into. But his point is compelling, right? Because you definitely see Yaakov kissing first and only saying hello afterwards, introducing himself. So according to the Or HaChaim, it's not so strange because clearly Yaakov was telling everybody about his connection. And that's why the phrase Achei Imo, the brother of his sister, the brother of his mother, comes up so many times because Yaakov is constantly saying that as he was doing the chesed for Rivka. So just l'sikum, and then I'll stop to take questions. We began by noting that Rivka tells Yaakov to run away. And we see in the beginning of our parsha that Yaakov simply walks away. So how could that be? The Tzvas Emes says that was the midah of Yaakov. He was an ishtan. He was a man who believed in Hashem. And when you believe in Hashem, there's no reason to run. You got to do your shadlus. You got to walk. But you don't need to run. Because if you believe Hashem is in control, you believe Hashem is going to take care of you, no reason to get overly anxious. Good. We pointed out that the Radak doesn't necessarily agree with the Sfas Emes, because the Radak tells us that the beginning of Perichah Pes tells us that Yaakov lifted his feet. There was a little bit of a bounce in his walk, because it was only after he got the Haftacha from Hashem, in that vision of the angels going up and down, did Yaakov now feel like he could walk securely. Before that, he was afraid. He wasn't deathly afraid, because the Radak says as long as Yitzchak was alive, Yaakov wasn't afraid for his life, but he certainly was afraid. And it's only after the Haftacha that we see Vayisa Yaakov Ragla that he starts to walk. Okay, so it's okay if the Radak and the Sfas Emes are not consistent with one another. They're totally two different genres of commentaries on the Torah. The Or HaChaim explained to us that the reason Yaakov walks is because he's got nothing else to, he lifts his legs, he's got nothing else to lift up, he's already been robbed by Eliphaz. And the Kli Yarka says that the Torah tells us that Yaakov walked because previously it was miraculous how he got to his destination, and now it was a normal, natural way that Yaakov was walking. Rabbeinu Bachai tells us that the imagery of the well, which is consistent with all the patriarchs, is symbolic of the future temples that will be built by Am Yisrael. And the Malbim had a bit of a different spin. The Malbim tells us that the well actually represents the exile, because it's away from the city. And the three flocks represent the three different exiles that will meet the Jewish people in the future. And the fact that the shepherds could only remove the rock when everybody came together is symbolic of the fact that Am Yisrael will be able to truly remove the impediments that separate us from Hashem when we all come together. Of course, that doesn't stay for very long, which is why the rock was back on top of the well. The Hadar Zakenim also had different imagery that he saw in this text. For example, the three flocks represent the three different festivals that Am Yisrael will celebrate in the future. We finished off by noting that the Torah tells us, Achei Imo, three times, that Laban is the brother of Yaakov's mother. So Rabbeinu Bachai gave two interpretations. Either it's to tell us that Yaakov was motivated by the mercy that he had and the love that he had for his mother, or to show us that Yaakov was doing L'shem Shemayim, again for his mother, not because he was taken by Rachel. And that's why the Torah first tells us that Yaakov saw Rachel, he saw the flock, and then only afterwards does he try to remove the rock, and not vice versa. And lastly, the Rechaim tells us that Yaakov is constantly telling everybody that he is the son of Laban's sister, so everybody has context why Yaakov is going to such great lengths to do chesed for what would have otherwise been a random lady. Now we know that it is Yaakov's first cousin. Okay, Yashikalach.